Hi, everyone. Hope you had a great weekend doing all the things you'd like to do. I'm very excited because my guest this week is an old friend I've known. Oh, I can't tell you how many years I've known. I love him to bits. He makes me laugh so much. He's one of the sweetest men around. He's an artist, a photographer, a musician. You might remember him from The Scaffold. And his name is Mike McCartney. Mike, how are you?
Twiggy Wiggy, how lovely to see you. But we can't see you because this is radio.
That's right. Well, I can see you and you can see me.
This is a
podcast. But they can't see us.
Which reminds me of, you know, that idea of insanity of seeing each other, but we're on radio. Now, tell me if this is right. I used to be in a group called Scaffold, right?
I know.
Which was originally called the Liverpool One Fat Lady Non-Electric Show, which no one could pronounce. It's true. Which nobody could pronounce. So we had to change. We looked at Miles Davis's Lift to the Scaffold with Jean Moreau on the cover. And it tumbled out of Rosé's Thesaurus as Scaffold. So that's what we became. And there is a rumor that when we did thank you very much for the Aintree Iron. If you want to ask me stories about Harold Wilson and the Queen Mum later, and okay, thank you very much, I'll tell you some daft good stories about them. And then in the middle was Do You Remember, which Steve Wright had on his radio every mm-hmm. day, and then before Lily the Pink. But there was a rumor that reached us, because in the middle, as you know, of this Do You Remember, for on radio, mm-hmm. suddenly it goes into John Gorman, John Scaffold, Tis Was Gorman, mm-hmm. doing a dance, a shuffle, right? Mm-hmm. And we heard that was one of your favorite records. The idea of listening on the radio and everyone trying to work out, what's this bit? We go, which was a bloke dancing on a record.
I know, it's brilliant, absolutely.
So
we
heard that you like that.
I did. I love Lily the Pink as well. It was brilliant. But we're going to talk about all that. But I have to tell you, I mean, everyone, I want them to know that you've got a new book coming out in September, isn't it?
I said, well, oh my God, because of this something called a pandemic and lockdown or lockup, as I call it, it's called trying to get this thing at everything. You'll read in my foreword to the book mm-hmm. that, there's Sarah come to get Will. And sorry, folks, what we didn't tell you about here was trying to get talking to you. I've had to enlist the help of my family and Rowena, my wife's called Ro, her sister Sarah's son Will has just come around, set all this up for us, and Sarah's just come to collect Will. So all of you say bye-bye, Will.
Bye-bye, Will.
Bye, Will. Bye.
We all need somebody to help us set up the internet, don't we? I do, definitely. I'm getting better, though. Doing this podcast, I've learned a lot.
Yes,
I'm getting quite friendly with my computer, which I wasn't.
Can you teach me then?
I can. Well, little bits. Anyway, the book's called Mike McCartney's Early Liverpool, right?
Early Liverpool. It's eventually, I think now, what was it, November the 8th is stuck in my head. It was going to be much earlier.
They sent me through a virtual copy, which I told you just before, me and Lee, my hubby, we've been going through it virtually online, and it did say coming out in September, but that's obviously been put back.
That's the trouble with these pandemics. You can't trust them.
Have you got your cup of tea, dear?
Of course I've got my cup of tea.
Are you a tea drinker? Oh, that's a nice mug.
This is Grandma Audrey's mug. It's a lovely blue mug with it's a bit, what style would you say that?
It's gorgeous. It's like, it's almost like a period drawing of a lake, all in blue enamel. It's lovely. It almost looks like a kind of Wedgwood.
Yeah, we've just been to White Park or something. National Trust. She was right into National Trust, which bought our house, can you believe? So cheers to eggs.
Cheers, cheers. What kind of tea are you drinking?
It's called Wirral tea. Merseyside tea.
Yeah, Merseyside tea. That's hysterical. But I have to tell you, we were looking, you know, through your virtual book, and there's a picture in there. I mean, I've seen, I have to tell everyone that I've known you for many, many years as your lovely brother and a lot of your family, I'm happy to say. And I met your gorgeous dad many, many, many years ago.
He was gorgeous.
I loved your dad.
Nobody knew my mum. That was I didn't.
How old were you when she passed on?
I was 12.
Oh.
And I've gone, oh, no, but that, like our kid and I, both of us, sorry for any of you listening from abroad, if I say our kid again, that is Liverpool colloquialism slang for my brother or sister. So if I say our kid again, that's our kid, my brother. So it affected both of us. It affects you for all of your life. Have you seen that telly program where they go back and they find people that are adopted? Mm. That one with what's her name, the lady and
Davina
McCall.
I can't watch it without dissolving into sobs.
Every time.
It touches me every time.
Every time it gets me. Same as me. It's the same thing. As soon as I start talking about my mum, I'm 12 years of age and I'm 77 now. The idea I'm still emotionally choked up, that's why this mental thing in the lockup has been, at first you dismiss it, oh no, get yourself together, stupid people. But then you realize how when it's suppressed, when you suppress mentally, and you don't realize, and it's gathering up, it's gathering momentum. And that's why people are going mad, because of that pent-up thing. And that's why they go, oh, God, I'm free now. But they believe the government. Oh, my God. We'll go into that. But it's that thing. It's that thing of like, oh, thanks, God. But it's still dangerous. Got to tell you, folks.
I know. Have you had your jabs?
Two.
Good, so have I. When it all broke out, because it's quite interesting to know how people have coped with the pandemic. Some people have kind of, especially writers and musicians that I've talked to, have kind of said, well, I kind of work, writers, it's a very lonely job anyway. They're in a room writing. So lots of writers I've spoken to said it didn't really overly affect them, except missing their families. That's what I found hard, seeing Carly and my grandkids. Oh,
don't you remember that at the beginning? Well, we couldn't even, never mind, touch them.
I know.
The worst thing. First of all, you can't see them. You're locked in your house, away from... I've got six kids, three girls, three boys.
I know you have.
And five...
How many grandchildren?
Five grandsons.
Okay. Oh, sons, wow.
Ro is dying to have a little girl so she can make it a dressel, dress it up. But we've had all the lads, etc. And so, it's been a biggie, this.
It has. But hopefully we're coming through it. We still don't go to big gatherings or inside with lots of people because I still feel a bit nervous. We actually went to our first restaurant last week.
Yes, no,
but
too.
We sat in the garden.
Yeah, good.
And I felt okay, actually.
That's the terrifying anomaly, isn't it? The fact that here we are locked up and we can't do anything. Unless we do something, then we're all going to die of boredom.
I know. Well, I think the mental health issue is as big as the physical, it seems to be. But anyway,
I didn't realise how important it was. But it's that terrible catch-22. You can't. Do you remember now? I can actually hug my children.
I know.
But that thing of seeing them when you see them for the first time, they're allowed into your home or at a distance, etc. And the horrible thing of not being able to cuddle them.
I know.
Ooh. But we won't go into that.
No, we won't. Yeah.
This is a happy show.
This is a happy show. But yes, it's interesting to see how people have coped, because photography isn't really a singular lonely job, because you have to be out there photographing
you
things.
Go out there.
But was this what came out of this?
The book? Yeah. Well, it first started out this lovely man called Brian Roylance. He was the boss of a thing called Genesis Books.
Mm-hmm, I know.
Genesis Books, for anyone that doesn't, has never heard of, I always thought it was Genesis the group. I thought it was their thing. But they're nothing to do. Genesis Publishing are separate from them. And this lovely man, Brian Roylance, to tell you the truth, he asked me a million years ago, Michael, all he wanted was, can I have your definitive, all your Beatle ones?
Yeah.
And I said, I'm doing scaffold things, I'm doing theatres, I'm doing thingies. One day, Bri, yeah, because I knew the power of the Beatles. And
of course.
That, I've had that all my life. And so, yeah, I'll get round to it one day, Bri. And it never happened. And slowly over the years, you're getting more, you know, it's getting less important. The enormity of the Beatles is getting less. It's still as enormous, but it doesn't personally affect you because it can swallow you. The big thing.
That was one of my questions to you, because I know you and Paul are really close, and I've known you both, well,
far too close.
Oh,
good Lord.
He's older than you, right?
Well,
you're the baby.
Can't you see? No, it's only 1.5 years. Thank God.
I say you're very close in age.
Thank God he's going to white hair at long last.
Yeah, he looks great.
He's joining the club.
I think silver hair is very distinguished.
Yeah, very extinguished, as my dad would say.
Very extinguished. But there's a picture in the book that really made me laugh when we were looking through it. And it's you and Paul had obviously gone to Butlin's holiday camp.
Ooh, yeah,
I think
we
it
did.
Was in late 50s. And there's a great, it's a fabulous photograph. It's, and you must have been quite young, because he's sitting on the top diving board.
Yeah.
And when I read the piece that goes with it, you said it was very brave because there was no water in the pool.
In the pool, there wasn't. I think it was pathetic.
If he'd have fallen, there wouldn't have been any beach.
There would have been no, well, I would have lost a brother at an early age.
I mean, it really made me laugh. Yeah. But it also said that I think it was your cousin was a red coat at Butlin's. Was it Bet? That's why you went there?
My first cousin, Bet Robbins, who was Bet Danner, and she married Mike Robbins. And Mike was the showbiz one, the real showbiz, Butlin's red coat. And so whatever was happening, you got introduced to all these wonderful people, because he works with, there's him, in one of the books, a photo of him and Des O'Connor walking along, etc. All the, what's his now, got his autograph in Les Dawson, got Les Dawson's autograph in 1953.
Wow.
To Mike Perez.
Because loads of young performers started at Butlin's,
yes,
didn't
that's
they?
That's right.
Didn't I read there in somewhere that you and you, because you were great fans of the Everly Brothers. We lost Don
God.
Died yesterday.
No, but just
did
think
you
of
hear that. That Don's passed on?
I didn't. Oh yeah. Do you want to hear a little story?
I do.
About the Ebbs, because we. Okay, I'll tell you the full story.
Go on.
A lot of this book, Mike McCartney's Early Liverpool, it's called. Out on Genesis Books, available from your local retailers at any second. Don't forget
to
buy
it. You got
your plug in. I haven't started yet. And so we, our kid and I, used to, now for all those used to our kid and I used to, in Forthin Road, a lot of this book appertains to a house that we moved in when I was 11, till I moved out when I was 21 at midnight, because something called Beatlemania had happened in between, and we had to go out at midnight to stop the fans getting the house. So this now is Thorstein Road, where we were little boys, 12, our kid was a year and a half older, and we used to love the Everly Brothers. And we loved harmonies. The McCartney family, the big part of our upbringing was like New Year's Eve, any party, it doesn't matter. Dad, they stuck me dad on the piano, got him He would ask for half pints, not pints. You'll see that in the book. Half pints on the piano. And Dad, then they'd come to him, right, play that, Jim, play that, Jim, play that, et cetera, et cetera. So he...
And did he play by ear or did he need music?
Yeah. Totally.
My dad was the same. My dad, about the same era. My dad was born in like 1910 and I think your dad was around that time.
1902. Daddy.
Yeah, a bit earlier. But my dad was self-taught piano.
Yeah.
But
well, he used to go, Dad used to be in a band called Jim Mack's Band, and he'd go around with a piano. But when they didn't have a piano, it was a bit hard to strap one to your back. So he could play a trumpet or a cornet as well.
Amazing. So that's where you guys get your musicality.
Only because of Mummy going up to heaven on October the 30th. First Halloween, would any of this been possible? Dad would have secretly would have liked us, but Mum would have never. No way would it
really.
No way. She wanted us. She would have had us in the professions. You would have been talking to Dr. McCartney or Father McCartney. Now you'd have had none of this bloody show business rubbish. Oh no!
Oh,
but Dad erred on that side, you know. So we used to love the Everly Brothers, still do. They're up in heaven now, singing those beautiful harmonies. So in our family parties, we'd have Dad on the piano, and then we'd all sit round doing sing-alongs. That's all. Carolina moon, you know, pity ho, pity ho, pity ho, pity ho, etc. But the most important thing, and Uncle Joe was particularly good at harmonies, right? And so when the Everlys came along, harmonies was in our souls. And so our kid and I used to be the Everly Brothers, right? In our little front parlour of Fulton Road, which I said, which a lot of the book is about. And so years later, so that was the Everly Brothers. And then we go on to Filey, Yorkshire, right? I have been to a scout camp with my brother, and long story short, I broke my arm. I was learning drums in Fulton Road. I broke my arm, and Ringo got the job.
Oh, wow.
Pete Best got the job, tell you the truth, and then Richie.
How funny.
But that's a long story. So first of all, before all that happened, I'd broken my arm, and so I'm not playing any drums or any, or the banjo. Dad bought my brother a guitar and me a banjo. So you're not playing anything. When you, not only did I break my humerus, which wasn't very.
I bet.
It hurts breaking your humerus. And so when it came down, I was like this with a thingy on my arm outstretched for about a month in Sheffield Royal Hospital on my own, because nobody didn't. In those days, you get in your car and come over and visit your son, all the family members. There's nobody had anything. So I think Uncle Harry once came in his van, etc. And Dad every now and then would come by train. But anyway, at the end, when I came, they took my arm down from this thingy, outstretched thing, strapped in there. They brought it down. Right, there you are. Thank God. I'm now going to be able to, normal, two hands back. That's what happened. So all of you looking at the telly, because you can't see it, there is a dead hand on my left arm. The left hand flopped down like a dead fish, right? It was paralyzed. So the nerves had gone. And so I'm not going anywhere. I'm not playing banjo. I'm not playing drums. I'm not playing nothing. So as a recompense, my dad said, we're going to go to Mike and Bet's Butlin's Redcoat place in Filey, Yorkshire, which is Sheffield. See, not far from Sheffield. Go to the coast and have a little holiday. So we get there. Me, in my strapped, I think there's a picture in the book, of a white sling, right?
Yeah.
Which I look as white as the sling. It was so, being there, out of everywhere. So there's Dad and I. And so there was, in Butlins, there was this competition called the People National Talent Contest. And you can win something like 5,000, but something extraordinary.
Wow, that was a lot of money. What was that worth? A lot of money.
And so anyway, to win anything and to get on the stage, etc., to be show business, our kid, he brought his guitar to Butlin. And so he said, why don't we get up and do the Everly Brothers? I said, Paul, look at me. I've just come out of Hussey. I'm as white as the sling here. I am not getting up on a stage. Do you understand? Oh, go on. You can win money in National Talent Contest. We can be famous. Yeah, you can, but I'm not. Do you understand? And so he turned to me and I said, Dad. So Dad said, oh, hold on, money. Try it, son. You never know. No, boys, no. So, okay, well, will you come to the ballroom? Gaiety Ballroom with me. I said, yeah, of course, to support you. So Dad and I went, Paul with his guitar. And so that was it, our kid's first sojourn into popdom.
Wow.
And so it came to going up and our kid's going to sing Little Richard, which he did very well. Even Little Richard says that Paul McCartney does a good Little Richard. Coming from the master, who is one of my heroes. Richard. And so our kid's going to go up on the stage. And so there, ladies and gentlemen, Mike Robbins announced, ladies and gentlemen, young man from Liverpool, big round of applause for Paul McCartney. So us, include the whole audience, and Dad and I clapping, etc. Our kid goes up on the stage, whispers something into Mike Robbins' ear. And so the next thing, oh, ladies and gentlemen, Paul has just told me it's a big treat we've got in store for you here. His young brother, Mike, has just come out of Sheffield Royal Hospital. He's accompanied here, and he's going to come up here and sing us the Everly Brothers. Oh, boy. And so the audience turned around, big round of applause. I am petrified. I go up. They're all looking at me, so I had to go up on stage. And I actually sang. It wasn't quite Bye Bye Love. Bye Bye Love. And so that, and then,
poor thing.
Oh yeah, that was Freudian. How the hell I ever got on stage after that, I'll never know. And then our kid followed that up with a great Little Richard, etc. But we didn't win.
You didn't win. Who beat you? Do you know?
It's probably the Everly Brothers. So, okay. Do you want to hear the end Everly Brothers
story?
Yeah,
I do.
Okay.
You promised you'd tell me.
Because they're so, aren't they lovely, listening to their heart.
Oh.
Absolute heaven. So now we're in the Apollo, and our kid used to do these Buddy Holly weeks. Remember them?
Of course, yes, very well. Brilliant.
So for all the people that don't know, my brother had these things called Buddy Holly Week, celebrated the memory of the other great 60s hero, 50s, Buddy Holly. 50s. And so every week he'd have, every year he would celebrate it. And this one he had at the Apollo. And so we're done, the show's all done. And we're up in the bar at the end. And at the end of the bar, I said, Paul, I said, there's one of the Everly Brothers at the end. And so our kid said, that's Don. I invited him. I said, blimey, the Everly Brothers, that's great. I said, you know when we did the Everly Brothers in fourth then? He said, yeah, of course. Which one were you? Were you Don or Phil? He said, I don't know. I said, well, let's ask him. So our kid beckoned Don to come up. So he comes up, hi. Now then, Don. That song, you know, Bye Bye Love, da, 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 da. That's what our kids sang. Who sang that in the Everly Brothers? And Don said, oh, that's why I sang that bit. So I said, okay, Paul, you're Don and I'm Phil.
And sweet. Was he lovely, Don Everly?
Lovely. I met Phil as well. We actually ended up in the Cromwellian. Remember the Cromwellian?
I've heard of it.
It's in Cromwell Road, down from the V&A, one of our favourite museums. Down from there is a club underground called the Cromwell. And we were going to see Ike and Tina Turner. Ike and Tina Turner.
Blimey,
That long ago.
Yeah.
And we ended up with Everly Brothers and me and maybe a scaffold at the table, and they didn't come on. And so we're waiting and we're getting our Scotch and Cokes down. And so an hour or so later, when it had really jam-packed, me, Scaffold, and the Everly Brothers ended up on the table because it was so chocker to see Ike and Tina Turner performing at the Cromwellian.
So were they amazing?
They were. Ike and Tina. Yeah, Ike and Tina. Oh,
I bet
Tina
they were.
Turner live.
Oh.
All these people, when you see them live,
I know.
Vincent.
I don't. You often think. I mean, I didn't. I've never met her, and I did them. But
no,
when I think
her.
Of how lucky I've been because of what happened to me, the people I've met. That you know, I met my hero, which is Fred Astaire.
Oh. And Ginger Rogers.
I did meet Ginger when I was doing. I did a big show on Broadway, a big musical in the '80s, and she came to see it.
Oh.
I've never been so nervous because you know when you're doing a show backstage, it always goes round who's in the audience if there's
That's
somebody
right.
famous.
That's right.
And the word went round. Ginger Rogers is in the audience, and I thought, oh my god, I was because we tap danced in the show. It was a big musical.
That's right. What was it called?
My One and Only.
That's it,
and
yeah,
it was
yeah.
all Gershwin music and it was tap
yeah.
dancing.
Yeah.
But because she was in the audience, I was so scared. My feet, I said to my co-star, Tommy Tune, I said, I don't think my feet are going to work. I'm going to be, because she'd be looking at my feet. And he said, she won't be looking at your feet. And then she came backstage afterwards and it was like, and I just think I'm so lucky. You know, I met her, I met Fred Astaire, who was my idol, and people like Lauren Bacall and, you know, the greats.
Saw a little
Absolutely.
Clip, one of those TikToks, and Lauren Bacall is Humphrey Bogart's Irish shot, and they start this jazz number. Lauren Bacall in this beautiful suit, fitted suit, starts doing that.
That's right.
Putting her shoulders up and down, walking towards Humph, and then slowly you see Humphrey Bogart. And then just as it's ending, the TikTok ends, Lauren... It does a little sexy look at Humph and smile. And he's doing it all, it's all dead straight for a film. And then, but he can't, and he smiled. So their little secret is exposed to the world on a TikTok.
Magical, absolutely. You know, that's one of the perks of being in the business, really, when you meet people like that, isn't it?
Do you want to hear when I met one of my big stars?
Who was that?
I didn't know. This was going in the Scotch of St. James.
Oh, yeah, I've heard. I never went there, but I've heard of it.
Scotch of St. James is one of those, you know, 60s nightclubs.
That's right.
And everybody went to it. And in fact, in the Scotch of St. James, when you went downstairs over the little dance floor and you looked at the back, there were two tables at the back. And one, nobody knew, and nobody ever sat there. And everyone must have wondered, what the hell, why doesn't anybody sit there? Because simple, the table on the left was the Beatles table. The table on the right was the Rolling Stones table. And then all the other tables you could sit at. But you weren't allowed to sit at those.
Wow.
So I was going in. And suddenly one of the Poppies, these Liverpool groups, if you want to hear about Bob Dylan, hey, we're doing well on our name dropping, aren't we? Hey, come on, kid.
I have to see if I can up that one. I met Bob Dylan, actually.
Okay. Well, I want to hear yours.
Mine's very brief.
Before
I literally
mine.
Said. Anyway, go on.
But this is just going in. Just, we're never going to have time for all
never.
These things. That's great, isn't it? the Mac and Twigs show. We'll have to do one called the Mac and Twigs show.
Yeah, that's a good
Twig
idea.
Twig Mac. And do a longer. And so I'm going in the Scotch of St. James, and one of the Poppies, these were beautiful kids from Liverpool, three sisters called the Poppies. And they looked Polynesian. They were beautiful ladies, all with their thick Scouse accents. And they were so gorgeous that that's why one of them, the story appertained Bob Dylan. They were so beautiful. And we knew the Poppies. They were just local girls, and they're just lovely, nice girls. And so I'm walking in Scotch of St. James. One of the Poppies is coming out and sees me, and grabs hold of my arm. And so, like you, I thought to myself, what did she just say? And so drags me down the staircase of a tartan wall, the Scotch of St. James. Mm-hmm. Aberdeen Scotch and Scottish, so yeah. It's tartan wall.
Tartan.
And she said, come in, ma'am. And so, I'm sorry, what did you say? And so in the end, he goes, come in, ma'am. And so, great, drags me across the dance floor where, what's his name, Jimi Hendrix was about to play. I thought I'd get that in.
Another one.
Okay.
It just hit the floor.
Well, it just was there. So she drags me across the floor. And so what she meant was, Are me chume mal, was there. And she goes over to the table where the other two gorgeous poppies are sitting. And this bloke, and she said, Are me mal, come make he's a actor like you. And this guy stood up. And so he puts his hand up and I shake hands with Marlon Brando.
Wow. That's hysterical. I didn't meet him. That's a pretty big one.
In his prime.
Wow. Was he amazing?
I'll tell you the end of the first. But no, I've got to tell you the truth. I was amazed because you know how these people on screen are giants. Mm. He was smaller than me.
Really?
Marlon Brando was small, that was a shock. But more importantly, what sort of human being was he, Mike? Right. So we get to go in. We get to the back table. Immediately, I go to the Beatles table. Scaffold, come on, lads. There, Zoot Money was there with us. Yeah. Right? Andy Roberts, we were there. It was our table. When the Beatles weren't there, it was my table. It was my mates. And so we're sitting there having our proverbial Scotch and Coke, the 60s drink, which I think somebody said Ringo invented. Somebody said Ringo invented Scotch and Coke. I don't know. We'll have to ask him. So,
That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So we're drinking our Scotch and Coke, and it's getting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, it's getting 2, 3, and now it's getting very late. Everyone's gone. Just our table, and Marlon and the poppies are still down there. And so we've come to the end of our scotch. And so, excuse me, some more scotch and coke, please. No, go home. We get home. We're finished here. We're locked up. Go home. Go away. And then one of us noticed on Marlon Brando's table, there was half a bottle of scotch. And so we said to Ronnie, who was Zoot Money's Glasgow wife, we said, Ronnie, can you be, she has Glasgow, she'll ask. So, Ronnie, can you go and ask Marlon, can we have a bit of his scotch? So she goes down immediately, has a little, you can see him chatting away in Glasgow, and then suddenly comes back with the bottle, half a bottle of scotch. We said, oh, we only want a little bit. No, Marlon said he's had enough, so it's ours. Now, that is the sign of a true gentleman.
It is, giving you half a bottle of scotch.
My rest cases.
Now, I wanted to also ask you, well, now we've stopped name dropping.
We haven't started,
we had a few, didn't we? McCartney, that's...
That's my name.
I know, but is it Irish... descent? Yeah. On which side are your family, your mum or your dad?
Both. It
oh,
is.
Both?
Yeah,
weirdly. Because you've got that little chart in your book.
That's right.
But it only goes so far. And I could see your mum's side went to County Donegal, was it?
County Monaghan.
Monaghan, that's right.
County and Monaghan.
But on your dad's side, I couldn't see. It just said like Everton and Liverpool, yeah, but it didn't go back far enough.
Yeah, it doesn't go far enough. In fact, that one that they do on the telly,
I did it. It's brilliant. I loved it.
Oh, no, because I love all that stuff.
So do I. Mine was quite sad, though. My great-great-grandma, they ended up in the workhouse. And I was hoping they'd find out I was like a princess or something, but I wasn't. Oh, no.
Hopefully my lot will be bandits and pirates and, gadabouts.
My mum's side of the story was quite sad, really, because they were so poor.
Yeah,
you know,
and
there
yeah.
was nothing in those days. There was nothing to help people. They ended up in the workhouse. I think she had like 6 children, and she couldn't feed them. The husband, her husband, had done a runner because he probably couldn't cope. and she ended up in the workhouse. It was really sad. But anyway, but if they ask
well,
you to do
it, thanks for
it's
bringing
really...
us down like that.
Sorry.
Thanks for really sort of cheering
but
the
yours,
for
you,
people.
You should get
home.
Them to do you because, you know, maybe
you know,
you're.
I'd like to go back, as you say. It only goes back to County Monaghan. And in fact, I found out I wanted to go back further, and they told me that, you know, now you're going to have to go back to County Monaghan, Castle Blaney, County mm-hmm. Monaghan, and go to the church. You did they do that with you?
We went. They could only trace
yes.
so far back because yes. then they, you know, they lose.
That's right, and that's what I have to do with my lot.
Yeah.
But you
say your dad's side was Irish as well because McCartney's an Irish name, isn't it?
Well, actually, the Irish lot in from Castle Blaney, County Monaghan. They went up to the top of Ireland, top of Northern Ireland, across the Giant's Causeway into Scotland and came down. got another story for you. and came down to Liverpool, which reminded me of a story that I was in a castle somewhere, Estella's wedding, I think you'll find it was, my niece's wedding. And down the lawn was this gentleman. I think he was called Madonna's husband, to tell you the truth. called Guy Ritchie in a kilt and clutching a little baby. It was Rocco. Has he got a kid called Rocco, who's now a big kid, right? But he's holding his little baby. And he's coming down towards me in this lovely kilt. And I said, hey, I like your dress, Guy. And he says, hey, you careful. I said, listen, don't you worry, son. My family, my McCartney family, came through Scotland to go to Liverpool. And we have, our tartan is the McIntosh clan. He said, oh, all right. He said, my tartan is the McIntosh clan as well, but we're the warrior clan. So he said, be careful.
Oh, okay.
Look out. Bigger than you.
Yeah.
I've got a great book, which is going to be in the one after this. I'm going to do one called My McCartney's People. Genesis don't know this yet.
But so I've got a scoop, have I?
One of the pictures, I'll get you and Lee in with your back to me in the Albert Hall.
I love
Hall.
That picture. I have to tell everyone, Mike took this amazing, I mean, I've been photographed by a few people over the years, but I love that photo you took of us. It's Lee, my husband and I, and it's taken from the back of us, so you don't see our faces, and we've got our arms around each other. It's just a very beautiful, happy, loving shot, isn't it? I love that picture.
And I think, Lee, from the photograph, from my memory, I see velvet.
Yeah, probably.
Did he have a black velvet jacket?
Black velvet jacket.
Yeah,
he is partial to a bit of velvet, darling.
Yeah, that's it.
You were musical when you were young. When did the photography bug hit? Was it kind of a toss-up, oh, I'll be a photographer or I'll be a musician, or what was the first passion? Or
to tell you the truth, because I broke my arm, I couldn't do the banjo and I couldn't mm-hmm. do the drums, and our kid was doing so well on his guitar and he joined these other lads and then they became a group called the Beatles. I don't know.
Oh,
really,
I think I've heard of those.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's good. Oh, that's good. That helps. That helps sell the book.
There's some amazing pictures in there that I've never seen before, and I've known your brother since I was 17, and I've seen lots of it. But these are brilliant because they're unseen photographs. So everyone should go and get this book because it's brilliant. Anyway, go on.
Some of them I don't even remember taking. And I just found
Well, I'm
names.
Sure you've taken so many, there's no way you'd remember.
Millions.
No way.
And so that's the joy. I come across them every day. I'm just lifting something up and there's a print, there's a neg, there is whatever.
Have you been good and kept them all archived or are they all in different drawers and different...
You got it in one. You got it on the latter was... I have the filing system of... it doesn't exist. It is not a filing system, Michael.
So you find them occasionally?
Yes. Sonny, my son, who is a photographer, Sonny is a photographer. Uh-huh. He berates me.
I bet he does.
And Josh, who's been helping with the scanning of these photographs, both of them said, "Dad, you know, for God's sake." And they are now, at long last, being put into a filing system. In fact, Ro is going to be, got a table. She makes wonderful dresses, Rowena. And she's got the whole dressing thing open. And she's going to be putting all these negs that I've found into beautiful storage and books and things.
Because it's a major job, isn't it?
It's an enormous job.
We're kind of, we've done it semi. I've got friends, though, who've done, they've got amazing archives all in alphabetical order and everything.
Oh, Peter Blake.
Oh, Peter. Yeah, lovely Peter.
My God, is he meticulous?
I know.
I once went into his studio. Sorry, we're just talking about Peter Blake, our mutual friend.
Brilliant artist.
And him and Chrissy, lovely people. We saw him the other day in London. Went to his studio. Have you been to his studio?
Of course.
Where they've got that thingy from Sergeant Pepper, the boxer. Who was the boxer?
Yeah.
On the Sergeant Pepper. Yeah. The first thing you do when you go into his studio
is see, isn't it?
You see that boxer, the real life size. But in there, on his table, are all these cutouts. Peter Blake sometimes does collages, and they're tiny little. He meticulously cuts these tiny little things, and he puts them all together, etc. But there on his table were all these hundreds of tiny little cutouts on the thing. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Pete, I've got to say this. What happens if someone opens the door and a breeze comes in and blows this bloody lot out the other door?" He said, "Oh, I'll pick them up.
Pick them up and start again."
Start again. But that's but his filing system is immaculate.
But I think Chrissy helps him with that, doesn't she? And his daughter, lovely Rose.
I think so. Rosie Posey. Yes, I think they do.
When you grew up as kids, you and Paul, were you? I know you're close in age. Was it very close, happy kind of times, or were you rivals?
You're joking. A year and a half difference. Now here, I'm sitting in Grandma's house, which Abby, my youngest daughter, has come from Australia to Lithuania, got trapped in Lithuania because her husband's Lithuanian, and eventually ended up in England looking for a job. Very talented girl. And so she's got two grandsons, two of our little, again, the same age as we were. And of course, boys, that's all they do is hit each other. You know what I mean? That's normal. Only parents that have boys, and boys will know this one so much. The elbow in the back.
Oh,
remember that one?
Well, I'm one of three girls, you see, and I was the baby.
You got it easy.
And, you know, I'm 7 years younger than my middle sister and 15 years younger than my elder sister.
Wow, that's big.
So she was like a second mum, my elder sister. So I never had that relationship. But, I've known you and Paul for many, many years. I say since I was 17 or 18. And you've always, as grown-up men, seemed very loving and close. I just wondered, as kids, you know, did you kind of have fisticuffs?
The normal, ordinary, very ordinary young men. And I suppose, you know, after Mum died, then everything changed. It's like, that's why we got on so well with John, because his mum had just died.
Yeah.
So we had this unsaid thing with each other because we'd lost someone so important to us.
Yeah.
And we had this thing with John that I always had special thing with him. Never said anything, but it was one of those, we understood each other.
Yeah,
because you experienced that deep grief at a young age.
Yeah, exactly. And as you said right at the beginning of our chat, it never really leaves you. It's always within you.
Oh, it's always there. Forever.
You learn to cope with it, and you learn to carry on and have your own families. Mm-hmm. But it's always within you, isn't it?
Oh, it's always there.
When the whole thing happened with the Beatles, it must have, for all of you, your dad, I mean, it must have been so disruptive at those mad years when they were, because it must have affected all of you.
Yeah.
Because I often think that. I mean, I went through a little bit of that, but not on the scale of the Beatles. But that thing about not being able to go out and, you know, right. or people wanting to touch you. And,
it's very weird,
isn't it?
Well, can you imagine that? And then on top of that, scaffold mania.
I say, then you...
You know what I mean?
Did the scaffold happen at the same time or was it a bit later?
You think the Beatles were big? Scaffold were bigger. Enormous. Talk about touching and the people that used to, men, women, children, dogs, everything. The odd llama passing at 100 miles an hour, dying to lick me. Unbelievable. Insanity that took
place. But you did have the scaffold had some huge hits, didn't they?
Enormous.
Wasn't Lily the Pink
Lily
number
the pink,
one?
The pink number one.
Lily the Pink.
Guinness Book of Records because it was number one, and then it went down, and that, of course, as you know, that's the end of it. Everyone had these things called what happens when you give a gift voucher.
Oh, yeah.
And they all, after Christmas, they all went to the record shop with the gift vouchers and bought Lily the Pink back up onto number one again. It went back again. It's the Guinness Book of Records.
Well, I think on that note, I could go on chatting to you for hours, but obviously your battery's going to run out.
Oh, by the way, Kobe is our mate. He's our producer. I want you all to say hello to Kobe now and his new little baby boy. Okay, so say hello. Hi, Kobe.
Hi, Kobe. Lovely
and little baby.
Milo.
What's your baby boy called?
He's called Milo.
Milo.
And he's loved gorgeous.
To Milo. From us.
Anyway, thank you so much for coming on my podcast and having a cup of tea with me.
Thank you very much. Thank you very, very, very much.
I'm dying to get a real copy of it. I'll look forward to that.
Oh, wait.
You think it'll be November, do you?
I don't know why November the 8th is in my head, and it might be. We're trying to launch it at Sonny's scale. Sonny has a marvellous place next to his brother Max's in Liverpool. Uh-huh. In Kempton Street, and his place is called Scale. We're hoping to launch it there. That's why November the 8th. And his brother Max has a tattoo parlor next door. So if you come to the opening, you can not only get a book, you can have a tattoo next door of Max's parlor.
Thank you so much. And it's so lovely to see you. And I could chat forever, but we can't. But I shall see you soon.
I hope so, my darling.
We do see each other quite a lot. Give a big kiss to Ro, your lovely wife, and I'll see you very soon.
As we say in Liverpool, I'll see you through a wet echo.
Oh, okay. I've never heard that before.
There's a paper here called the Liverpool Echo. Echo. And so I only worked it out. I've been saying that to my kids. We say all these family sayings, put it there if it weighs a ton, in goes your eye out.
I know. My mum used to say, if you can't fight, wear a big hat.
Yes, another one.
Where's that from?
Yeah. Oh, no. The best one is if you're having a fight and your dad's getting fed up with it and you're saying, dad, why? To shut us up, Dad used to say, because there's no hairs on a seagull's chest. Now get out of that.
I think
one.
On that note, it is goodbye.
There's a great one to leave everyone listening. Work that one out.
Question in the air. Anyway, I love you lots and I'll see you soon. Oh, gosh, I really enjoyed that chat. That was so brilliant. I love Mike so much. He has got stories. I mean, we could have gone on chatting for another 2-3 hours. He's got stories. Maybe we should serialise the Mike McCartney Tea with Twiggy because he's got so many amazing stories. Sweet, lovely man. And do get the book when it comes out. He thought it was November, but look out for it. Mike McCartney's Early Liverpool Years. There's some great photos and stories. Anyway, have a lovely week and I'll see you next time. Bye. If this is your first time listening to Tea with Twiggy, please do remember to tell your friends. You can also subscribe for free on your podcast app and listen to all my previous guests. If you want to connect with me, I'd love to hear from you. You can find me on Twitter at Twiggy, or you can find me on Instagram at Twiggy Lawson. My thanks go to all the people that have helped this podcast happen. Many thanks to James Carroll and all the team at North Bank Talent Management. Thanks to all the team at Stripped Media, including Ben Williams, who edits the show, my producer Kobe Omanaka, and executive producers Tom Wally and Dave Corkery. The music you can hear now is my version of Waterloo Sunset by The Kinks. If you'd like to hear the whole song, you can find it and all the other songs I've recorded on iTunes and Spotify. So check it out. I look forward to you joining me for my next episode. So see you then. Bye.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.